Museum Lampu.
Museum Lampu.
Or Selamat Datang ke Museum Lampu. Mm-hmm. And well, how it came about was, well, to begin with, Caroline invited me to be in the show.
Yeah.
Based on my previous experience as lighting designer for theatre. And one of the largest and last projects I worked on as lighting designer was with Huzais Laiman for the Singapore Arts Festival at a huge theatre space in Singapore. Mm. And so strangely, it was then that I realised, actually, I'm not a lighting designer.
Mm.
I'm not really interested in lighting within a theatre space, a formal theatre space. So when this opportunity came up, like, okay. And it was good that Caroline was about rounding up people who wanted to play.
Yeah. You've enjoyed multiple success from all your films.
Mm.
The transition of you have been working with
filmed arts and then now sort of like film. Dabbling in visual art class.
So yeah, so now this crossover where you've taken theory from script writing and stories and adapted it into,
because everything is cross-cultural and intercultural in a sense that, you know, like it's funny when Janet Pillay, my mentor, also like was awarded, you know, like a cross-cultural arts award.
Definitely.
For her, cross-culture is actually sort of like intermedia, cross-media, intramedia sort of work.
Yeah.
And although my passion in the performing arts started with lighting design, it was good because I was a collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I was very much a behind the scenes person.
Mm-hmm.
But it allowed me access and privilege to observe the practice and processes of theatre directors, the likes of Christian Jade, Jack Billet. And strangely, it's when I started directing my own short films, television, film projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the lighting design practice that
exactly.
I took over,
yeah.
But it's as lighting designer, as collaborator, observing how these directors work.
Yeah.
Worked rehearsing, working with actors, mounting a production, their philosophy, their perspective.
Yeah.
That's actually strangely what I took.
Yeah.
So it's not sort of like technical lighting design.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
the process of making a story and how to structure. Or sort of, at some point, Chisak Tim mentioned, okay, it's all about creating a frame. And Museum Lampu, I struggle, and eventually I decide, okay, I'm just going to create a frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Museum Lampu.
Mm-hmm.
And then I fill the frame with how I structure and the sort of like mini narratives and mini stories I'm going to tell are actually quite parallel and consistent with what I do in film, television, although I'm no longer a practicing theatre arts person.
Mm.
A lot of my stimulus and impetus at the moment comes from the visual arts. Strangely, I no longer find I no longer find things very exciting from films. Occasionally, an idea in a film or a style in a film really excites me. But actually, that's more rare than the norm.
Yeah, because the rawness and the breakdown of the ideas in visual arts are very, it's easy to compartmentalize.
Yeah,
you
it's tangible. You saw like you see very clearly what this person, that person
is
up to. So actually, although I'm not a trained art historian, art history person, blah blah, I sort of am a self-taught contemporary arts practitioner. Contemporary arts aficionado or like fan. The other thing that I love apart from film, apart from visual arts, is cooking. Because I think again, talking about process and structures and timelines, when you cook something, it's deciding what you're going to cook, the intensive sort of like preparation process, or sometimes actually the preparation process takes quite a long time, which is like developing a work.
Yeah.
And an intensive production period, which has to be entirely focused.
And timed.
Yeah, and timed. And then the post-production process, which is like you serve it, you enjoy it, and that continues for a long time.
Yeah.
So in that sense, strangely, I love cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I love going to see and consume contemporary visual art.
Yeah.
And Museum Lampu, strangely, hopefully, is a synthesis of some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I'm not a maker, designer. I'm not going to make beautiful, wonderful, elaborate lights. But I'm going to create a structure which is playful using Lampu. It's about recycled and found objects. So I will use some. I'm going to bring some of that passion of cooking. So it was about baking styrofoam and see what happens. Let's pop styrofoam in the microwave, nothing happens. Let's pop it into the oven. Oh my god, something interesting happens. Let's...
That curvy one, right? The curvy one was from...
Styrofoam, it was from putting it into an oven.
Okay.
And then when it's malleable, so like... shape it.
Right.
I love agar-agar, and I thought, like, okay, I'm going to try. Just, like, try putting a light into agar-agar. Again, sort of, like, I like the idea that it sort of, it starts and then it sort of, like, disintegrates and, like, you know, as long as people don't touch it and get electrocuted.
Yeah.
Even sort of, like, the icing, instead of icing a cake, icing a car battery and sticking with candles. So, in that sense, there's, in a way, strangely, there's a cooking process in quite a number of the things.
Right.
If I could, I would have stuck the entire kelapa sawit into a microwave or in the oven and just to see what would happen. But the whole idea of Museum Lampu is that it's a corn museum.
Of course.
And but the processes involved were sort of like playing.
Yeah.
And writing sort of like Changi serious descriptions.
Like, I didn't know that you cooked a lot of this stuff.
Which was also sort of deliberate in the sense that was sort of like if anything I don't have technique, but I will sort of like, you know, I will bring some of that that process of cooking into the making of these lights or light objects. They weren't really lights. I think halfway through the creation process of this or Museum Lampu, like I said, once I decided the concept was okay, how do I cook and bring sort of like cooking techniques into the making of these lights? And I was like, okay, constantly thinking, okay, how to bake this, how to cook that, how to stew this, how to da da da. So that's what it was about. Like. So, like, you know, then the anchorage that you give an object with text is something that I suppose borrow directly from my TV film practice, which is sort of like, you know, writing.
Yeah.
This was writing, not so much writing a huge thing, but writing blurb. Writing a blurb to describe Aksi Kaliber, which is that.
Yeah.
I am actually a reluctant writer. I started writing out of reluctance, and now sort of like I write out of necessity sometimes, but actually also I know what I'm good and not good at in terms of writing.
Yeah.
So for Museum Lampu, it was all about just creating mini blurbs that tell a story.
Yeah.
So within that structure that I created of Museum Lampu, fill it with light objects that reflect the sort of passion that I have, which is cooking, and then write a blurb that sort of like matches with it. So that was basically the process, which I think is not dissimilar to the process that I use for film and TV. But strangely, what I've discovered in the last 2 years is I don't consider myself a funny person. I don't consider comedy my strength. But in my recent work, humor and fun have become very prominent. And I would say that I still don't know how to do comedy, but I know fun and I know humor. The current film that I'm doing at the moment, Pisachuko, I still find it hard to call it a comedy, but I know that there's a lot of fun and humor in it.
Yeah.
So likewise, in Museum Lampu, I wanted to bring fun and humor. It's not comedy, because like, what is comedy in individual arts? But you can identify fun, humor. It was almost deliberately wanting to like bring that oxymoronic cheeriness into Museum Lampu. That's why you have like colorful icing on a battery with like whatever, and you have like the kelapa sawit with the silly fairy light, which is the juxtapositions and oxymoron.
Yeah,
which is Malaysia.
Okay, you say that you're playing, but you actually did have some serious subject matter.
Mm. It's Malaysian and global, in the sense that, you know, like, because it's big, mega topics like the environment, energy, light, you know, energy sources, recycling, upcycling. I think whether you're a storyteller or you're an artist, you need a perspective. And I don't have a clear, defined perspective about these big topics of climate change, of the environment, If anything, mine is quite a realist, slightly skeptical perspective. So things like this energy-saving bulb was lit to commemorate the historic agreement between America and USA, America and China to combat climate change. I mean, those are big picture things that that need to be made, the decisions that need to be made that aren't being made. So all these sort of like small little things like, you know, stop production of 100 watt bulbs, will it really make a difference? Because like the big picture difference, the big picture things are not really being addressed.
Yeah.
So my perspective sort of sits in between as well.
Yeah.
I'm not black or white. I'm not sort of like, I don't believe that climate change is not happening, nor am I sort of like a green activist. So in that sense, in that big picture thing, I brought few silly big picture things down to the ground and jabbed at it and played with it. So that was what it was about. And the Malaysianness in it are, we do waste a lot of electricity on colourful lights around the city.
Yeah.
To like menceriakan our cities, blah blah.
Yeah.
So one of the very first ideas of the Kelapa Sawit and that fairy light was about what is excessive in this country.
Yeah.
And I think energy is cheap in this country.
Yeah.
And we waste a lot of energy.
Yeah, we do.
Especially sort of like now living in the UK part of the year
and
knowing how expensive electricity, water, energy is.
Yeah.
When you come back and like energy is cheap and people don't realize. And even things like the Firefly, the Clip Lip, you know, things that are unique in Malaysia that are also global. Because, you know, for a museum to be significant, it's all like things that are Malaysian but also international. So like the Klik Klik What If. Yeah, like I said, it's entirely a museum of what ifs.
Yeah.
What if the entire colony in Kuala Selangor dies out, which probably is an inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be quite sad. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, so it's like playful, like, you know, the last clip that lit a lantern, and rather than like lazy to find a body or a clip, I just cut out like a Firefly airline logo and stuck it in there.
Yeah.
One of the last things to come out was the Earth Hour, the battery and candle cake. There was a whole buzz, and yes, I suppose it makes a difference, but I'm still a skeptic. Will it make a huge difference? So that whole the battery and the icing and the candle was about that. They like do initiatives. Yes, initiatives like Earth Hour are important, but corporations in the big picture, everyone is going green for corporate branding, also in a way an alternative commercial venture exercise.
Yeah.
So I'm quite skeptical about all these things. And to a certain extent, like the individual initiative, I feel that you decide what your individual initiative is based on what you want it to be for yourself, without the big intention of saving the world.
Yeah.
So what that means for me is, on a day-to-day basis, like I wrote in the biography, I aesthetically as well as energetically, I use low wattage bulbs at home because it suits me. I try to carry a shopping bag rather than, we have recycling bins for, you know, garbage and recyclable material. You basically what I'm saying is that you try and buy locally grown produce rather than produce that has travelled from a very, very long distance. Yeah, again, so like big concepts like carbon footprint, what your carbon footprint is a very individual interpretation.
Yeah.
But as long as you are processing it and you decide what your carbon footprint interpretation is, mine is, like I said, is neither black or white.
Yeah.
It sits somewhere in between. I do something, I can't do it all.
Yeah.
I'm doing something. Will it change the world? I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I'm doing something for my own sort of like satisfaction and Yeah, like just good vibe, not good karma, just sort of like that. At least I'm doing something.
I imagine like show.
Like, laser.
Yeah. Yes. I was thinking that. Our Batman sign, you know, yeah. It's thing of the environment, to, you know, it's actually attaching ethics to a show.
Which I think is this year's theme. Maybe next year's theme will be different. If they decide to do TLS 10, maybe it will be a different show. It's still the light show, but a different big umbrella theme and approach into it. Yeah. I'm not a designer. I'm not, in terms of the French concept of it, I'm not a plastic artist.
Yeah.
I don't work with material, and I don't sort of like master technique. In a way, I think sort of like, you know, people like Lisa, Susim, they have been exploring and mastering technique with plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Very focused.
Yeah.
I've not had that focus, that energy, that commitment. So I knew I'm not going to go up that alley. I'm going to have to try a different alley, and that is that's the beauty of about a group show as well. That it's about different people going up different alleys, and I think Kopman went out a different alley, Farah went out a different alley, so all of us went up different alleys.
Yeah.
And I because I know the producers of the show were like trying to like bug me for my concept right up to a late point, because I. Not that I'm a last minute person, I need to sort of like know what it's about until the very last minute. So like I said, once I committed to creating a frame, it was about then filling the frame with light objects that were technically simple, but loaded with a parallel blur that makes sense of the piece.
With conceptual art.
Using
conceptual
art. I mean like, you know, like the fathers of conceptual art, like, you know, this is not a latrine, this is not a toilet bowl, this is something else. So sort of I'm not trying to do a Duchamp either. It's like, you know, but at the same time, like this, if you did like this is the last 100-watt bulb in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to believe it if you think that it's in a museum.
Yeah.
This is the last couple of liters of used vegetable oil, not recycled. So there was like, this is oxycalibur, you know. So it was, in that sense, it's not big philosophical conceptual statements either.
Yeah.
It has to be brought down. And going back to what you're saying, like, you know, like for me, whether it's TV or film, it has to be accessible. So in writing the blurbs and creating the light objects, they have to be extremely accessible and trying to be mass deliberately with an intention of subverting is much harder.
It's very hard.
It's very hard. It's an extreme struggle in my television and film work, which is deliberately mass, but trying to invert, subvert. For me, that is actually the ultimate postmodern challenge.
It's the challenge. It's a challenge of
If postmodernism laid out that, okay, it's a breakdown of high and low culture, it just laid it out. But then, in practice, how you actually go about accessing the mass with some thought process...
Making it,
And it's actually quite funny in the sense that, like, on the opening itself, I thought the crowd at the opening was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was
great. And in many ways, Adeline Uy from Rogue Art and I were sort of like, I mean, I looked at Adeline and sort of like said, it felt like a Five Art Center production 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, Five Art Center was constantly about not trying to preach to the converted.
Yeah.
It was all about accessing different audiences and new audiences.
Yes.
And sort of like Adeline and I looked at each other. Well, we think this was a success because it was a very eclectic crowd. And so, like, 10 years later, maybe Christian Jit's vision lived on, you know, that, and the fact that it was a Christian Jit astral fun thing. And I, for me, the main thing I wanted to observe was how people were actually going to interact and sort of like actually engage with my pieces, because quite a number of it required engagement and so on. It just play lah, you know, like you light the candle, you make a wish, you hold Excalibur and stick your finger in, and write on the globe. Like, those were three objects that were particularly interactive. And I just sort of like stood from down there and like saw all these people, especially young kids, sort of like doing it. It's like, oh wow, success really lah. You know, like I wanted them to engage, and they actually did. Yeah. People, I was actually very, even myself, maybe I'm not an optimist. I'm definitely not an optimist. I'm a realist bordering on, I'm a pessimist realist. And so when I actually saw people reading the blurbs and actually interacting with some of the pieces, it's like, oh, good. That was the whole intention.
Yeah.
To go mass, I think, begins with the assumption that you do not underestimate your audience.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are active, not passive.
Yep.
That although they, you know, within Asian cultures and other commerce, they are not as articulate or vocal about their opinions, but it doesn't mean they aren't processing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So as long as they're processing, they don't necessarily need to articulate it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean also that if you don't, it doesn't mean that you aren't processing, that you are
exactly.
Passive audience.
Yeah.
So I believe in that sort of like, you know, active, passive mass audience out there. Like,
yeah.
And you have to begin with, with the assumption that, and it's all, it's entirely about testing that audience and taking them and sort of trying to push them to the next level. And my context is and always will be first and foremost Malaysia. And because I think, again, so like the mass Malaysian audience is a tough nut to crack.
It's very.
My context was always the Malaysian mass public, and I realized that actually like it began with television, because television is cheap in the sense that if they like you, they stick to a station. If they don't like, they will flip station.
Yeah.
They don't need to commit to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Television is your playground to test ideas out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it still is for me.
Yeah.
So in terms of visual art, it's like it's stimulus and a practice that has actually become strangely a feeding point for a lot of my TV and film work. And and this show was just an opportunity to play play.
Yeah.
So for me, and I think it's always interesting when you sort of like then get out of your, not comfort zone, but the zone that you are sort of known for.
Yeah.
When you come into a zone like making art, which sometimes can be very precious and whatever. So that's why within that context, I'm an outsider, mind.
Yeah.
But at the same time, trying to make a valid point.
Yeah.
But I would like to continue to practice art in that sense.
Yeah.
Mm.
Again,
I want
like
to continue cooking.
Yeah.
Like I want to do a show about pies. Like making pies. Like what would you put into a pie? from observing artists, the thing about artists that is sometimes different from filmmakers, whatever, is the practice and trajectory. Because, you know, visual artists are usually, most of the time, individual entities.
Yeah.
You chart your trajectory, and your trajectory is an exploration, or, you know, a recurring and sort of like an ongoing exploration of either the same motif, theme, process, practice, whatever. And if I am to be an artist, I want to bring cooking, which is a huge passion of mine, into my artwork. So it will be cooking my way into being an artist.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Because it's about bringing what you know best and what you love best.
Yeah,
otherwise,
yeah.
What's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
So, that's the.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm glad this has happened.
Yeah, that's cool.